Good morning, this is AM, I'm Kim Landers. On the program today, a massive operation underway in Vietnam to move hundreds of thousands of people out of the path of Tropical Storm Tembin. Russia's main opposition leader barred from taking on Vladimir Putin in next year's presidential election. And warnings to investors about the Bitcoin boom.
If the housing market is in a bubble, then I think the Bitcoin is the mother of all bubbles. It certainly looks like a bubble to me. It's hard to understand why it's commanding such a high price.
Hundreds of thousands of people in Vietnam's Mekong Delta have been evacuated as Tropical Storm Tembin approaches. The storm has already left a trail of destruction in the Philippines, with landslides and flash floods killing up to 200 people. Thousands more have spent Christmas in emergency shelters. Peter Lloyd reports.
This is what Christmas Day sounded like for some people in the middle of a typhoon in southern Mindanao. A bleak day, and for some desperate, drenched villages, a very narrow escape from the river, bubbling up rich and thick and taking all in its path. One by one, they inched across a rope line, a waist-high torrent urging them the other way and an almost certain dire fate. Across this vast, troubled and historically impoverished Muslim island, aid is finally getting through. Troops delivered supplies to southern Mindanao, which lay right in the path of the storm. Reaching these remote pockets of the Philippines has not been easy.
We have 1,000 people with no homes at the moment, and I'm sure that figure is going to grow. We are addressing water right now. We have sent water tankers. We're addressing the hopes of people. We're trying to provide, for an example, cash grants by tomorrow.
Though the Philippines is well used to devastating storms, this took many by surprise. The speed with which the rivers turned into lethal torrents outmatched efforts to abandon villages. At least 200 people are known to have died. Officials say many ignored warnings to leave coastal areas and riverbanks and were killed.
Houses were getting flooded, but people could no longer exit their homes, so they got trapped by the strong waters. They were being swept away.
There used to be 103 houses here, but when the flash flood happened, everything was washed out.
Boulders the size of a family car were washed down from mountains and flattened small homes and shanties. On the hard-hit Zamboanga Peninsula of Mindanao, a village has been wiped from the earth, but the mosque is still standing. And tens of thousands have been on the move in search of emergency shelter. In Rome, Pope Francis offered prayers for the people of Mindanao in his weekly blessing to the crowds on St. Peter's Square.
Merciful Lord, take in the souls of the dead and comfort those who are suffering as a result of this calamity. Let's pray for these people.
It's the Red Cross that's coordinating the relief effort in the Philippines.
We already provided water and hot food, and we're going to be distributing non-food items, certainly blankets, mosquito nets, and hygiene kits for those who are in evacuation centers so that we could alleviate the suffering of many of the folks there.
The country is battered by about 20 typhoons a year. The full extent of the devastation is only going to become clear when all remote areas are reached and people are accounted for. Vietnam will feel the remnant Tembin today, according to Vietnamese officials, and they're not taking any chances. 1 million people could be on the move from low-lying areas along the southern coast. For Vietnam, this is their year's 16th typhoon.
Peter Lloyd reporting. The Christmas break brings a temporary truce for the nation's politicians. The warring parliamentarians have returned home to their electorates and, in a change of focus, have offered goodwill and even love for the festive season. Melissa Clark prepared this report.
2017, where did that all go?
Good question, Barnaby Joyce.
Anyway, here we are at Christmas 2017.
Most of the nation's politicians are feeling the same way as the Nationals leader. Pretty relieved the end of the year is now in sight.
It's really important that you get a break, that you get a chance to say g'day to your family. It's so important.
Well, most are feeling relieved. Of course, some didn't make it through the tumultuous year. In fact, Quite a lot didn't. 14 of the 76 senators, about one in five, have gone. Some have resigned. Many more learnt the hard way about Australia's constitution, their citizenship or financial affairs forcing them out. That all started mid-year, with two Green senators falling on their dual citizenship swords. But Greens leader Richard Di Natale has managed to make it to Christmas with his sense of humour intact.
And with that in mind, I have some suggestions for your naughty and nice list.
The naughty list may not yet be complete.
The old parties have been very, very naughty by not telling people about their citizenship. We were a little bit naughty too, but as soon as we knew, we told the truth and said sorry.
The High Court will examine more citizenship cases in January. The outcome could prompt yet more referrals and possibly more by-elections in 2018.
Okay, and one lemon or two?
Just one.
Okey-doke.
But the Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull, isn't letting the problems of 2018 spoil the seasonal ceasefire.
Are we a bit short of prawns, are we?
He spent Christmas Day at Sydney's Wayside Chapel, helping other volunteers provide lunch for those in need of a feed.
It's practical love, it's unconditional love, it's really what Christmas should be all about.
Perhaps love is still in the air following the passing of the same-sex marriage laws just before Parliament rose for the end of the year. But that love is unlikely to last long into 2018.
I'll get a selfie with you and me. You are just so, looking so fantastic.
Minister for Colourful Affairs.
That's right.
The Prime Minister will begin the year with yet more thorny political issues. Protections for religious freedoms, a banking royal commission, infighting in the Nationals. In fact, managing the political family fights will be a New Year's task for the opposition leader too. Labor's factional alliances are shifting under the feet of Bill Shorten.
At Christmas we celebrate what matters most, love and family.
The Labor leader and his wife Chloe stayed out of the spotlight for Christmas, releasing a message in advance.
And please take care on the roads and take care of each other. Have a Merry Christmas.
And a safe and happy New Year.
As Barnaby Joyce knows all too well, this is time for the nation's politicians to recharge.
And make sure that you keep a bit of energy in the tanks for a big 2018.
Because the resumption of battle isn't far off.
Anyway, have the best of Christmases, have a happy Christmas, and all the best of luck for next year.
Deputy Prime Minister Barnaby Joyce. Well, the coalition is going to need more than luck to turn around its political fortunes in 2018. Support for the coalition has fallen away in Queensland and is down in New South Wales too. With more, I'm joined by political reporter Melissa Clark in Canberra. Melissa, an analysis of the state of the polls at the end of the year is not going to make for some happy reading for the Prime Minister.
That's right. The news poll in The Australian is looking at the trend in the polling over the final quarter compared to where things stood at the last election. And there is a significant slump in support for the coalition. Its primary vote is down 11% in Queensland compared to the last election. And it's a pretty similar picture in WA as well. And there's a smaller but notable slump in support in New South Wales too. And for Malcolm Turnbull personally, compared to Bill Shorten, there's a similar slump. But it should be noted that the real indicator of how this might translate, should there be an election, the two-party preferred vote, has moved very little over this period. It sits at 54-46 in favour of the ALP, and that is still a clear lead for the ALP.
Now, a big focus this year for the Prime Minister has been energy policy. Has it helped his electoral fortunes?
The National Energy Guarantee, Snowy Hydro 2.0, they were certainly key to Turnbull's approach this year on what is a thorny issue in Australian politics. But an Ipsos Fairfax poll that's out today shows that only 18% of voters think Malcolm Turnbull is doing a good or very good job of managing climate change. And the same poll shows that the federal government is seen as the body or the entity that is responsible for dealing with the problem of climate change. And there's widespread belief that the international community is making progress, but not so much Australia. So this will be an issue for Malcolm Turnbull. He'll have to revisit it in 2018, given that negotiations with the states is still ongoing for the NEG, the National Energy Guarantee, and there's still a lot of details to be worked out for Snowy 2.0.
What are the political prospects for 2018?
Well, the same issues that have dogged politics this year are going to dog politics next year as well. Right from January, the issues of citizenship, protections for religious freedoms that came up around the same-sex marriage debate will be back on the agenda first thing. The coalition will be hoping that an improved economic position and hence the potential for tax cuts will be the driver of a change in support. They're hoping it might sway votes back to the coalition, particularly in the key states of Queensland and New South Wales. And they'll be hoping that that will bring back older male voters who have drifted away from the coalition to the minor parties.
Political reporter Melissa Clark. This is AM and it's 10 minutes past 8. The Pope has used his Christmas message to call for a two-state solution to end the Israel-Palestine conflict. There's been renewed tension in the region after the United States declared it had relocated its embassy in Israel to Jerusalem. Just days ago, more than 120 countries backed a UN resolution urging the US to reverse its decision. But overnight, Guatemala announced that it too will shift its embassy to Jerusalem. Penny Timms reports.
Standing on a balcony above hundreds of worshippers, Pope Francis used one of Christianity's holiest days to call for peace in the Middle East. We see Jesus in the children of the Middle East who continue to suffer because of growing tensions between the Israelis and Palestinians. On this festive day, let us ask the Lord for peace for Jerusalem and for all the Holy Land. Let us pray that the will to resume dialogue may prevail between the parties and that a negotiated solution can finally be reached, one that would allow the peaceful coexistence of two states within mutually agreed and internationally recognised borders. Earlier this month, the United States announced plans to relocate its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, effectively recognising the Holy City as Israel's capital and therefore its jurisdiction over it. Palestinians have long seen East Jerusalem as the capital of their future state, and the US decision has stirred an already unstable situation. Just days ago, more than 120 countries backed a UN resolution urging the US to reverse its decision on Jerusalem. But overnight, the Central American country of Guatemala announced it too will be relocating its embassy in Israel to Jerusalem. It's a decision unsurprisingly welcomed by Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
And see, Guatemala, God bless you, my friend, President Jimmy Morales. God bless both our countries, Israel and Guatemala.
Praise has also come from the country's foreign ministry spokesman, Emmanuel Nashon.
Israel says thank you very much to Guatemala. We thank the president of this country and also the people of Guatemala for the important decision to move the embassy to Jerusalem. We believe that this is a just and correct decision, and it reflects also the deep friendship between our two countries. We should remember, and this is very important, that Guatemala was the second country in 1948 to recognize the state of Israel, immediately after the United States, and it's only normal that Guatemala should be also the second country following the United States to recognize that Jerusalem is the capital of the state of Israel.
Catholic leaders in Jerusalem have used Christmas services to call for political courage in the conflict, referring to Jerusalem as a place to be served, not possessed. Meanwhile, according to the Jerusalem Post, New Zealand singer-songwriter Lorde has cancelled a planned performance in Israel following backlash from pro-Palestinian activists angry about Israel's human rights record. Last week, the singer responded to an open letter which urged her to cancel her planned show in Israel, tweeting, "Been speaking with many people about this and considering all options. Thank you for educating me. I am learning all the time too."
And that report from Penny Timms. To Russia now, where opposition leader Alexei Navalny has been barred from contesting next year's presidential election. He's been deemed ineligible because of a criminal conviction he says is politically motivated, and he's calling for the election to be boycotted. Sarah Sedgie reports.
Political opponents of Vladimir Putin don't tend to have long careers, but the man considered to be Russia's main opposition leader, Alexei Navalny, has been an enduring thorn in President Putin's side for some time now. And Mr. Navalny views the decision to ban him from running in next year's presidential election as political.
It's not about me. It's about the fact that a candidate is needed, who will finally come to the election and speak openly about everything that happens in our country now, who will describe our reality honestly. Absence of perspective, poverty. I did that, and that's why you don't want me to take part in this election.
After Russia's last presidential election in 2012, Mr. Navalny was involved in organising rallies against alleged vote rigging. The demonstrations caused a great deal of embarrassment to Vladimir Putin. Mr. Navalny, a long-time anti-corruption campaigner, was arrested earlier this year when he again organised protests against alleged government corruption. And if he's not allowed to run in 2018, Alexei Navalny has vowed to mobilise his supporters again.
We announce the voters' strike. We will call for the boycott of these elections. We will not recognise the results of these elections, and we'll have a big national campaign that will include not just the call against the elections, but also monitoring of the turnout.
Alexei Navalny is serving a 5-year suspended sentence related to a fraud scheme. He would still be able to run in the election if the conviction was cancelled or if an exemption was made. And he argues the case is politically motivated. But Russia's Central Election Commission voted almost unanimously against his participation in the election, and they say they're simply following the rules. Boris Ebzeev is a member of the Central Election Commission.
The crime which Alexei Navalny was charged with is a serious crime which deprives a person who had committed that crime of a right to run for the post of the President of the Russian Federation.
But Alexei Navalny insists the decision only compromises democracy.
You tell all those people who are against Vladimir Putin, you are barred from the elections. We won't ever let you anywhere because you disturb our cozy little world in which there are us and there are candidates who don't even try to fight for voters. And there are predetermined election results.
The Russian presidential election will be held in March, and President Vladimir Putin is widely expected to be re-elected.
Sarah Sedgie reporting. Israeli authorities have become the latest to crack down on cryptocurrencies, announcing they'll ban companies trading in Bitcoin from operating on the Tel Aviv Stock Exchange. Interest in the cryptocurrency has hit mainstream, and depending on who you speak to, Bitcoin prices are set to continue soaring or the bubble is about to burst. David Cody reports.
Nativity Dunbar got on the Bitcoin train just in time.
I remember watching a documentary about it. It's called Banking on Bitcoin, and it just made so much sense.
Now, only a couple of months in, she's already seeing returns unheard of elsewhere.
So I first purchased over 50 days now. It was around about $85. And today that's worth well over $1,000. No bank will give you that in terms of a return.
Despite jaw-dropping growth already, Nativity Dunbar is watching some wild predictions that a single Bitcoin could eventually be worth $1 million.
I have faith that eventually one day in the future it will. I'm not banking on it. I mean, it's a bit of a game for me. I like to take risk and I like to be challenged. So, look, I know that I could lose it overnight.
So are you staying in for the long haul or do you have a price at which you'll get out?
At this stage, I am buying and holding specifically Bitcoin because to me, Bitcoin is blue chip.
News and awareness of Bitcoin is increasing exponentially, much like its price. But investing in it is a big gamble. And Simon Russell, the founder of Behavioural Finance Australia, explains the enthusiasm is driven by very human factors.
There's probably a bunch of underlying psychological causes here, the way we respond to the cues of other people around us, for example, the way emotion impacts us, the way our attention is directed by the media and various other influences on our behaviour. And those things you would think are underpinning irrational aspects of investment behaviour.
He's latched on to one analogy he's read, which finds parallels between the Bitcoin frenzy and the plot of the 1978 film Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
I keep seeing these people all recognising each other. Something was passing between them all. Some secret. It's a conspiracy. I know it.
There can't be a conspiracy.
Matthew, I'm telling you, something's going on here.
It's a bit like that with Bitcoin. We first started out with everyone being humans in the sense that, well, this is a strange alternative investment product. But over time, we all turn into this alien sort of, we're all on board until eventually it sort of overcomes all of us.
Other experts are even more concerned. Dr. Timo Henkel is from the Research School of Economics at the Australian National University.
If the housing market is in a bubble, then I think the Bitcoin is the mother of all bubbles. Yes, it certainly looks like a bubble to me. It's hard to understand why it's commanding such a high price.
He doubts that governments will let Bitcoin challenge the role of traditional currency.
At some stage, I think states are going to become involved and try to curtail Bitcoin, make sure that it doesn't become any form of legal tender.
But there's plenty of money to be made in the meantime, particularly for the middlemen raking in the fees. Chris Weston is the head of research at IG Markets. It's been offering trading on Bitcoin price movements for 5 years.
But it's really been since this became what we class as a mania or hysteria, I suppose, which is probably the last 6 months that we've seen really strong interest from not just Australian clients, New Zealand clients, but clients across Asia as well. So, you know, it's really been the buzz product at the moment.
He thinks Bitcoin could be worth a lot more if institutional investors hop on board and Bitcoin gains legitimacy as a payment option for online retailers like Amazon.
But I'm hesitant to come and put a price on where I think it's going. At the moment, I just think it seems like it wants to go higher over time, although, you know, we've had a big move and it feels like we probably want to consolidate a little bit these levels. But, you know, every pullback is supported. There's a wave of cash which is coming into the product all the time. It does feel like it wants to go higher.
It's music to the ears of Bitcoin investors like Nativity Dunbar.
I would say I'm 75% confident in the blockchain technology because I use it already and I've seen it work and it's been foolproof so far for me. And just the fact that transactions are encrypted 6 times, which means that it's not as vulnerable to hackers as the normal banking system transactions, that's a big winner for me.
After seeing what's happened so far, she doesn't have much time for the pessimists.
Initially, I was gobsmacked. I just couldn't believe that it was happening. But now I'm just amazed and I always look at it as going to increase even more.
Bitcoin enthusiast Nativity Dunbar ending David Cody's report. They're cute and they're fun, but if you think of buying a puppy for the family over the holidays, perhaps you should think again. While states like Victoria are trying to stamp out the puppy farm trade, vets and the RSPCA are warning that if you're not careful, you could unwittingly be propping up cruel breeding conditions. Jane Lee reports.
Investigators at RSPCA Victoria have seen dozens of dogs bred in conditions that aren't fit for household pets.
We've seen dead animals in amongst live animals. We've seen female dogs bred until they physically are starting to collapse. We've seen puppies living in amongst excrement with food scattered across the floor.
The group's head of prevention, Sophie Buchanan, says that illegal puppy farms are big business. And she says Victoria provides the perfect environment for them to flourish.
One of the reasons why a number of breeders base themselves down here is because we have a pretty temperate climate, but it's also free from a lot of the issues that we have in more northern parts of Australia, like ticks and parasites.
So if you're buying a puppy here, it's hard to know whether it came from a caring breeder or one of these illegal puppy farms.
So we estimate that between 60 and 70,000 puppies are sold in Victoria every year, and we have absolutely no idea where they come from. So that's around 75% of the new puppy market in Victoria every year.
Dr. Paula Parker, president of the Australian Veterinary Association, says that animals housed in poor conditions can have trouble socialising with other dogs and also suffer growth problems.
These puppies and kittens are much more likely to come into contact with viral disease, with bacteria and with parasites. And so if people do come into possession of one of these animals, the best thing to do is to go in and see their local vet.
The Andrews government has now passed a law to try to stop puppy farms. This includes a statewide pet exchange register. The RSPCA's Sophie Buchanan.
By 2019, no advertisement for a puppy or kitten in Victoria will be able to be published without what's called a source number. And what the source number will do is identify exactly who it is that is selling or who has bred the animal that you're looking to buy.
The new law will also ban pet stores from selling puppies and kittens. But Dr. Parker is concerned this could lead to more puppies being sold underground.
If we cut off the public-facing part of that supply chain in a pet store, have we dealt with the supply chain that's behind them, or are we encouraging those people to sell on online websites or through friends or through social media?
Even after the law takes effect next year, Ms. Buchanan says that people wanting a pet should find out as much as they can about their new dog's parents.
Make every effort to make sure that you see the home or the facility in which that animal was bred so you can reassure yourself that the welfare conditions have been good for that animal.
And if you can't do that?
We would say don't buy it. Make sure that you look for the next animal where you can do that.
And Dr. Parker suggests that they first look for their new pet at an animal shelter.
All of the shelters put in a lot of work in making sure that these dogs have had their health status assessed and they go through a behavioural assessment. And so it's something to think about adopting one of those pets and giving them a second chance at life.
Dr. Paula Parker, the president of the Australian Veterinary Association, ending Jane Lee's report. Crisis support services say Australians need to reach out to people who they think might be struggling with depression or loneliness in the post-Christmas period. They say the holidays cause a significant spike in calls to their hotlines. Lifeline says it reflects a wider trend, with more people asking for help in recent years. Catherine Gregory visited one of their call centres to see how those calls are managed.
Hello, this is Lifeline. May we help you?
It's the Christmas period in one of Sydney's crisis support call centres, and the phones are running hot.
It sounds like you're really struggling with life at the moment, and I just need to know if you've been thinking of suicide.
That's Denny Woodburn. She's been volunteering at Lifeline's call centre for 25 years. She says there's often a spike in calls this time of year.
Christmas is a really sad time because if people have lost people they've loved, they notice it just so much.
And what do you do if you think someone is suicidal?
We ask them straight away if they're suicidal, and we ask them what ideas they had about it, what plans they have, and we then, depending if they have a plan, we then disable the plan and we stay with them on that call and keep them safe and intervene if we have to.
How does that make you feel when you're talking to people that are about to commit suicide or thinking about it?
It gives you a real knot in your tummy. You just feel a lot of empathy for them.
Both Lifeline and Suicide Prevention Australia say while they don't necessarily see suicide rates spike over the Christmas period, the rates of calls to crisis support services reveals that a lot of people do suffer over the holidays. And the frontline workers say it's intense loneliness and isolation that drives people to the hotlines. Nita Brooks works at the call centre every Christmas Day.
They're the lonely ones. They're the ones with relationship problems. They're sort of so typical of Christmas. And then a lot of our other callers who are struggling with depression find that Christmas intensifies that for them, so they're really, really struggling then.
Lifeline anticipates 40,000 calls for help over this holiday period. But it says that while calls may drop on Christmas Day, it's the weeks following that they really see a spike. Last year, it was around 10%. Lifeline CEO Bob Gilkes.
People are feeling the financial pressures. There's relationship issues. Often around this time of year, some of the reasons people are calling is because of the effects of excessive alcohol consumption, either their own or those that are around them. It's just that the Christmas period is a time where it's exacerbated for people because they don't have the opportunity to be engaged the way that they want to be in the festivities.
But he says it does reflect a wider trend across the year.
We've seen an incredible increase in our calls over the last few years. 3 or 4 years ago, we were taking about 600,000, 650,000 calls a year. We're now looking at about 1 million calls a year through Lifeline.
The National Mental Health Commissioner, Professor Ian Hickey, says Christmas creates unrealistic ideas about what the traditional family should be.
Spending more time with your family with unresolved family issues is not necessarily helpful. So what we see is a spike in mental health problems through loneliness, through isolation, through loss of social cohesion, in those who are not on such great terms with their families or their families just don't function that well, and those who actually their social connection is outside of families.
Professor Ian Hickey, the National Mental Health Commissioner, ending Catherine Gregory's report. And if you or anyone you know need help, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14. Briefly in finance now, the Australian stock market is closed today. China stocks were trading yesterday. At the close, the Shanghai Composite Index was down 16 points. The Australian dollar is buying 77 US cents. And that is AM for today. I'm Kim Landers. It's 8:30.